The following A2A one-on-one feature is a production of the nonprofit Adversity to Advocacy Alliance. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of A2A, our advocates, allies, or ally organizations. We hope you'll find this interview both informative and inspiring.
Hi there, I'm Jeff Bell, and today I'm talking one-on-one with Dr. Dacher Keltner, author of the new book, The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence. Dr. Keltner is professor of psychology at UC Berkeley and the founding faculty director of the Greater Good Science Center. He directs the Berkeley Social Interaction Lab. He's the author of the best-selling book, Born to Be Good. And we at A2A are very proud to call Dacher a member of our leadership council. Dacher, thanks as always for making some time for us.
It's always great to talk with you, Jeff.
Well, before we dive into your new book, which is fabulous, by the way, I just about finished it this morning, I want to ask you to describe the bigger picture of your work. As you know, we have four principles that that are behind A2A: empathy, service, purpose, and resilience. And for the past couple of decades, you have been doing amazing empirical research around those very topics.
Yeah, your four principles have kind of guided my scientific career. Jeff, in many of our conversations, I've really been interested in two questions in my lab. And one is, what are the evolutionary biological origins of why we're good to people, why we empathize, why we share, why we cooperate? And a lot of that work led to Born to Be Good. And then the second question that I've been interested in for 20 years is, what does it mean to have power in the world? What does it mean to really make a difference in other people's lives? And ironically, what we've discovered is something that really counters 500 years of thought, which has long held that you have to be ruthless and coercive and Machiavellian to really lead. And in fact, what we're finding is that, you know, the great leaders and great power is found in service and things that you emphasize.
And that dovetails so well with our A2A mission. As you know, our little tagline is, we help ourselves by helping others. And we believe that it's very empowering to be of service to other people, to reach out and do something constructive for the greater good. And it's interesting, your book does such a nice job of delineating what we might call everyday power versus more of an enduring power. And I kind of want to walk through some of those distinctions and also talk about this paradox, which we see in the advocacy world as well. So let me just dive in here to the book itself, The Power Paradox. What did you set out to learn in this project?
Well, you know, the first thing that we set out to learn, as you said, Jeff, is that we really have to rethink today in the 21st century what power is. And if you looked at the scholarship and how people thought about it for some time, they tended to equate it with, are you wealthy? Do you have political power? Or do you have military might? Mm-hmm. And really, when you think about your daily life, right, and you think about one of the members of A2A who suddenly feels empowered to change how we think about various kinds of labels and the like, you realize that power is just part of daily life. It's everywhere. And so what we first set out to really show, and there are a lot of data behind this, that power is really about making a difference in other people's lives. And when you share, or when you develop the recycling program in your neighborhood, or when you speak out for advocacy, you have power, and you're stirring our society and local communities to change. And so we need to, first of all, rethink what power is really making a difference in other people's lives.
And then the paradox. And we'll come back and talk about some of those principles of enduring power that you spell out so well. But first, let's touch on the paradox, because this is an important part of your book.
It's right at the heart. And, you know, and some of this may be familiar to to every person who's lived out in the world. So, you know, one line of our work found that Machiavelli really got it wrong. It is not better to be feared than loved when it comes to getting power today. You know, people gain power in schools and in workplaces and in military units by cooperating, by sharing, by bringing people together and forming strong ties, by what I call serving the greater good, right? Enhancing the welfare of the people around you. That's fine and dandy. Now, here comes the power paradox, which is, once we feel powerful, and my lab's done a lot of work on this, we tend to feel euphoric and sort of all powerful and omniscient and very optimistic. And that can lead us to engage in really problematic behaviors and paradoxical behaviors. We gain power through social intelligence, but then the paradox is once we feel powerful, we act in a lot of ways that make us look like out of control sociopaths sometimes. So we stop empathizing with people, we forget their names, we're more likely to stereotype people. And then in the realm of behavior, you know, once I feel a little bit powerful, I'm more likely to lie and to cheat and hoard resources, to have sexual affairs. A lot of problematic behaviors stem from having too much power.
And it's really important to note here, too, that this can be with the best of intentions. And I'll put myself out there and give an example, Dacher. I remember when I first went public with my story and published a book, and there was all this incredible feedback and, rewarding of this brave thing that I did. And, you know, I went and did this with the best of intentions. But before long, I mean, I'll be honest with you, I was checking my Amazon ranking. You know, I'd go to a book signing. And what do you mean there are only 12 people here versus the 40 that were there last week? And I had to catch myself and say, why are you doing this? Does this sound familiar at all?
It sounds very familiar, Jeff, you know. And we shouldn't, you know, get too carried away. I mean, this is a very pervasive tendency that we gain power by benefiting other people. And then once we gain power, we lose focus on others and we become more self-interested and a little bit more interested in our own desires. You know, there we go. You know, that's the power paradox.
You know, it's interesting, too. I mean, we're talking about some self-catching here, if you will. But these can really be taken to extremes. I mean, we see good people who have done really good things, who cross a threshold, and all of a sudden, as you say, they're not behaving in magnanimous ways anymore.
Yeah, you know, I mean, as I dug into writing The Power Paradox, and we had done a lot of studies that demonstrated the abuses of power, the other side of this paradox. You know, one study, we brought people to the lab, we put one person in charge, randomly assigned. They were working on a problem with their peers. Halfway into this study, we put out this plate of 5 chocolate chip cookies. Everybody ate a cookie. All groups left one cookie on the plate, and we wondered, who's going to take that extra cookie? And it was the person in power who always reached out and grabbed it. And not only that, we coded their videotapes. They ate with their mouths open, lips smacking, and cookie crumbs falling on their sweaters, right? They're just acting like monsters. And
cookie monsters.
You know, this is just randomly assigned people to get a little power and they suddenly abuse their privileges. You know, the thing, Jeff, what we started to discover as we looked into the literature is, I mean, this is everywhere. So at workplace, when work organizations, for example, they have studied who is more likely to be rude and uncivil and humiliating in how they speak to other people. And it's 3 out of 4 times it's a person in a position of power. And those impulsive, unethical tendencies tend to make other people really stressed out, disengage from their work, do less innovative work. So there are real costs, as you say, to the more extreme versions of the power paradox.
Well, then before we zero in on some of the enduring power principles that you spell out, let's move ahead to the 5-fold path to power, because I think those 5 reminders that you put out there are really the antidotes to the intoxication of power, if you will. Could you walk through those with us?
Sure. You know, I'd be delighted to. So, you know, I mean, one of the things that we've learned, you know, not only do we tend to abuse our power and do we tend to those mild abuses and very problematic behaviors when you think about, you know, the people at Enron and stuff like that. I mean, one of the questions that I always get when I teach leaders of different kinds is like, well, how do I avoid this stuff? Because they see it everywhere and it undermines the health of organizations and family life and the like. So, you know, I think the first thing that you really have to be mindful of is just be aware of your feelings of power, you know, and we know power feels wonderful and euphoric and almost a little manic, to be quite honest, where you feel expansive and, you know, you're more likely to endorse a statement like, I believe the world would be better if I'm in charge, you know. You lose sight of your humanity and your place in society. So be aware of your feelings of power and just kind of make a mental note of, whoa, am I too expansive right now or the like. Alongside that is a second thing. And this not only comes out of historical observation, but empirical data as well, is really always practice humility, you know, really strive for being humble. I remember working with Pete Docter, the Pixar director, on the film Inside Out, which was just an astonishing experience. I was this scientific consultant. And at the, you know, and as the movie started to unfold and we saw it, I was blown away at how strong it is, as a lot of people were.
And I was so surprised and delighted to see your name associated with that.
Yeah, and I remember talking to Pete at the end of it, you know, like, let's celebrate. And he's like, you know, there were some flaws in it. I'm thinking about my next story. You know, he had a very humble approach to it. And I think the next step, you know, this fivefold path to really handling power is just to stay close to humility. Remember, you always have good work to do to help other people. That really, you know, lends itself to the third principle, which is, you know, we abuse our power for a really simple reason, which is we move away from staying focused on other people to really privileging our own desires, right? And then a lot of mayhem ensues. So, you know, the great leaders really stay focused on other people. You know, I love this quote, Thurlow Weed, when he was writing about Abraham Lincoln and he followed his career and was struck by his ascendancy in the Republican Party, said, you know, the defining genius of Lincoln is he sees all who come to see him, and he reads everything that they send to him. He always, as a practice, stayed focused on others. So, so I think if, you know, just kind of being aware of your power, know that it fluctuates, staying humble, be focused on others. And then, you know, the last two are really, I think, really return us to, you know, your work, Jeff, and, you know, being in your circle and just seeing the kind of work is the kind of empowerment I really hope to bring into focus with this book. But, you know, when we, fourth principle, practice respect and dignify other people, right?
Yep.
And you have done such good work in that.
Thank you.
And really try to change the facets of society where people are inappropriately stigmatized or held back. When we do those two final things, then our power will really persist.
Such important reminders. And one of the things that I love about them is they're really basic and intuitive, but they're those sorts of things that we need to be reminded of sometimes. And Decker, I want to go back to your definitions of enduring power, because I think this is a great place for us to kind of wrap things up here. You identify four qualities of enduring power. You say enduring power comes with empathy, it comes with giving, it comes from expressing gratitude, and the fourth one really caught my eye. It comes from telling stories that unite. And if I might, I'd like to bring that back to A2A, because first and foremost, we are a storytelling organization. And you and I have spoken before, as part of your role for us as an advisor, about the science behind all this. It's more than feel good. You know, we know experientially, those of us who are doing adversity-driven advocacy, that it feels really good to share our stories. But you've been doing this empirical research, and I'd love for you to speak to that and how that all pulls back into your new book as well. Why storytelling is such a powerful phenomenon?
Yeah, you know, it's really counterintuitive. So, you know, we know a couple, you know, we know humans are a storytelling species. You know, there are, in a lot of the villages from different parts of the world, there's a person in that village who is responsible for telling the culture's stories, ours, right, in little Hindu villages or the like. So it's this very powerful social practice, a very universal social practice. And, you know, it's interesting, Jeff, you know, one of the things people say about great leaders, and you know, you and I have probably bumped up against this in our own personal lives, as have your listeners, is, God, they're great at telling stories.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out storytelling is at the very essence of enduring power, especially stories that unite people. Why is that? Well, we know from the science that stories, they are ways of representing important new truths about the world. So when you tell new stories about the strength that people have when they are given a label of a mental condition, like I've had anxiety disorder, but I can tell a story about that. I feel empowered in that condition. We also know that stories unite people, right? That great stories are viral. They spread across our new social media and the like, and they make us feel like we're part of a community. Stories are rewarding. They make people laugh. They nudge each other in the shoulder. So those three qualities, that stories speak to new truths, that they unite people into communities, and that they're rewarding, bring people together. And we've done all these crazy studies showing, you know, we did a study of a basketball camp, kids at a basketball camp. We had them do this little storytelling exercise. And the kids, 10-year-olds, who were great at telling stories, were respected and esteemed by all the peers in the camp. So I think, you know, your kind of work, Jeff, of telling these cutting-edge, paradigm-shifting stories turns out, and this is something everyone can do, this turns out to be one of the deepest bases of enduring power.
Why don't you leave us with some final thoughts, if you would, for folks who are considering stepping into advocacy as a form of self-empowerment?
So, you know, Jeff, one of the things that struck me when I was writing The Power Paradox, and I was just reading tons of history about the great social movements of our species, is they begin with stories that are, you know, a form of advocacy, right? So Thomas Clarkson was in England, and when he started hearing about the conditions of slaves on the slave ships, he literally had almost a breakdown, and he wrote this essay, and he became central to the abolitionist movement. And his primary form of persuasion and leading to historical change was stories. And he was showing pictures and drawings of what the slave ships were like and what, just sort of telling these stories from the shipyards. And he changed the world. I think we are, and why I'm working with you, is we are in a paradigm shift in terms of thinking about the human psyche, where, and this is true historically, we used to lock up people who had anxiety disorders or OCD or depression or the like, and torture them. And now today, we are changing thanks to the stories at places like A2A, where people tell the conditions of their lives. And I think what they will find, as I have found, describing my own lifelong struggle with anxiety, which I now tell to all my classes, is it is a form of empowerment that will stay with you through time.
Daggert, thanks as always for sharing not only your own personal story, but the great research that you're doing. The Power Paradox, How We Gain and Lose Influence, on bookshelves now. Daggert Keltner, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Jeff. It's always great to be with you.
You've been listening to A2A One-on-One, an outreach project of the nonprofit Adversity to Advocacy Alliance. To listen to other one-on-one interviews and to learn more about A2A, please visit us online at a2aalliance.org. And thanks for helping us spread the word that we help ourselves by helping others.